Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 127 in the series entitled Leave Your Personal Bondage, Our Daily Opportunity to Transcend the Ego, Chapter 47. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the spring of 5761.
Good evening. Perhaps we can say good Yom Tov. Tonight is Pesach Sheni, the second Passover, the 14th day of Iyar. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, he passed away in 1950. He divided the entire book of Tanya throughout the days of the year, beginning with the day of Yutes Kislev, the 19th of Kislev, which is the day the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya, was liberated from his imprisonment in Tsarist Russia, where he was incarcerated for teaching and spreading Chassidus. So you start learning the Tanya on the 19th of Kislev, and the cycle culminates on the 18th day of Kislev the following year. And he divided it in a way that throughout the year, from Yutes Kislev till Yutes Kislev, one can complete all of the five sections of the book of Tanya. It happens to be that we finally caught up. Because according to the annual cycle, today, the 13th day of Iyar, chapter 47 of Tanya, the entire chapter is studied. So finally, in our classes, after a good few years, we caught up to this cycle. It's just unfortunate that by next Sunday we will already be behind, but that's life. But I mention it because it's a good opportunity to encourage you to learn a lesson in Tanya each day according to this cycle. It can enrich and enhance our spiritual lives very significantly. In the book Sipurei Chassidim by Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin, he tells a story about a chassid of Poland, a Polish chassid who made an aliyah to the Holy Land and he settled in Jerusalem. But after a while, he could not accustom himself to the lifestyle, to the standards, to the patterns of living in the city of Jerusalem. It was just too much for him. He really didn't like it. So he decided to leave Jerusalem and to return back to Poland. Before he left, he went to the tzaddik Reb Simcha Binim of Varka. He was a son of the holy Reb Mendel Varka, Reb Nachem Mendel of Varka, and he lived then in Jerusalem. So he went to Reb Simcha Binim of Varka to bid farewell, to say goodbye. when he related to the tzaddik of Varka the reason why he's leaving Yerushalayim and going back to Poland, Reb Simcha Binim of Varka gave a deep sigh and he said, "My heart goes out for you. It seems that Yerushalayim did not like you. Because if Yerushalayim would have liked you, you would have liked Yerushalayim. And I feel bad for you that Yerushalayim could not find and experience a liking towards you." And this penetrated him deeply, and he decided to stay in Jerusalem. So in the 46th chapter of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe requested from us to reflect upon the truism that King Solomon Shlomo HaMelech states in the book of Mishlei, Proverbs in chapter 27, "Kamayim haponim leponim, kein lev ha'adam la'adam." As water reflects a face back to a face, so is the heart of man to man. Water is like a mirror, as we learned. The face you bestow upon the mirror, you bestow upon the water, that's the face the water will present to you in return. If you're smiling, the water will be smiling, so to speak. And if you're angry, the water will reflect to you an angry and miserable demeanor. And the same is hard of man to man. The feelings I harbor towards another human being, those will be the same feelings that he will experience towards me. And apparently from this story, this is also true concerning Yerushalayim. The feelings Yerushalayim has towards you, those are the feelings you will have towards Yerushalayim. So when you bestow, the Alter Rebbe said, loyalty and love towards another person, that person's heart will reflect back to you the same emotion you presented to him. So when somebody truly cares for you, genuinely loves you, the display of affection and concern towards you will inevitably be reflected in your heart back to him. When I matter to somebody, he begins to matter to me. And the Alter Rebbe emphasized that this response, which is inherent in the nature of each man, is commonly experienced even when the two people are similar in status. Certainly, if the one who displays love towards you is on a much higher level, and despite him being in another realm totally, much more noble, much loftier, much more exalted, despite the fact that he is above and beyond your lifestyle, your reality, your personality, he nonetheless genuinely cares about you, and your condition truly is of importance to him. When a person of such superior status chooses to bond with you, he leaves his exalted domain and he descends to your condition. Particularly, the Alter Rebbe said, if your condition may be miserable and disgraceful, and nonetheless he departs from his rich domain and he comes into your lowly environment and he lifts you from your condition and becomes closest friends with you. He chooses you as his closest pal, embracing you, and he begins to share his innermost self with you. How much more so does such a person begin to matter to you? Even if you have a heart of stone, it will melt in love to this special human being. So the Alter Rebbe said that kechol hadvarim ha'elo, kechol achizoyin hazeh. This entire scenario is what occurred with the Jewish people, that Hashem, in His pure essence, the essence that fills all the worlds and transcends all the worlds, and furthermore, that in the presence of that essence, all of the worlds are considered as though they don't exist. They're absolutely valueless in the presence of that reality. Nevertheless, the Jew matters to Hashem so much that he himself descended into the dunghill of civilization, liberated the Jewish people, sharing with them his innermost essence, his deepest self, by granting them the Torah, the mitzvahs, which can be seen, the Alter Rebbe said, as the inner essence of Hashem. Specifically, the Torah is a divine kiss. The mitzvahs are a divine embrace. Through them, the Jew becomes betrothed in a marriage with Hashem, and he is elevated to the transcendental plane of Hashem's essence. He is given the opportunity through Torah and mitzvahs to become kadosh, holy, which means to share his life with Hashem. So when one reflects upon this truth, he will be able to, the Alter Rebbe said, reveal and bring out a profound love to Hashem, which is already existing within him, because since Hashem harbors such an intense love towards him, so kamayim upon him leponim, naturally, inevitably, you harbor a very intense love towards Hashem, which needs just to be brought out and revealed. And now the Alter Rebbe continues chapter 47 in direct continuation of this theme.
This is a level of emunah that comes, that we come to this, or this is a level of das.
Do we have to believe in this, or can we experience this? We'll touch upon this in a moment. It's relevant to chapter 47. You'll see. It's page 132 in the center of the page. Perik Mem Zayin. Zog the Alter Rebbe. Hine now, b'chol dor v'dor, in every single generation, or b'chol yoyim v'yoyim, and every single day, chayav adam lirei satzmai. A person is obliged to regard himself, ki'ilu hu yotza yoyim mitzrayim, as though he had today come out of Egypt. And this is a quote from the famous Mishnah in the 10th chapter of Masecht Pesachim, which we say during the Seder night in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and it's obviously very relevant to this evening, which is Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. Zog the Mishnah Pesachim, Perek Yud of Kofta Zayin, that b'chol dor v'dor chayav adam liris esatzme kilu hu yotzem emitzrayim. In each generation, man must regard himself as though he has departed from Egypt. But the Alter Rebbe adds three words on the words of the Mishnah, b'chol dor v'dor, in every generation. The Alter Rebbe adds, o b'chol yoyim v'yoyim, not only in every generation, but every single day. And then the Alter Rebbe adds, kilu hu yotza hayoyim mitzrayim, as though he left today. Today he departed from Egypt. Now apparently that's how the Alter Rebbe interprets the meaning of the Mishnah and Pesachim. And perhaps one can add that since there is a mitzvah to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim each day, as the Mishnah says in Brachas, we also talk about it in the Haggadah, there is a mitzvah to mention and recall the exodus of Egypt each day. So the Alter Rebbe sees the Mishnah and Pesachim as a qualification and an explanation as to how one ought to recall the Exodus each day, not just to recall an event of the past, but b'chol yoyim v'yoyim, he ought to regard himself as though he left Egypt.
It says that if I saw them in one regga, they would welcome to him.
No.
So that would be the case. So let's say who yotzeh every regga from the tribe. Why yom?
You want the Alter Rebbe should add b'chol regga v'regga every moment. Listen, if you can do it once a day, you're good off. We're well off. If we can do it once a day, we're pretty well off. But with this opening of chapter 47, the Alter Rebbe apparently is answering a major question one asks. We so dramatically described the infinite, intense affection Hashem displayed to the Jew during the events of Yitzias Mitzrayim. But we all know the exodus of Egypt occurred in the year 2448 from the creation of the world. The Tanya was printed in the year 5000. That's more than 3,000 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Today we are in the year 5761, Tavshin Samach Aleph, which makes it 3,313 years since the events of the accident of Egypt, since the events of the Exodus. So obviously the picture of Yetzias Mitzrayim is a picture from the remote, ancient history of the Jewish people. But it cannot resonate within us in a practical way. I mean, it's difficult to inspire a contemporary audience and to elicit from them genuine emotions and feelings as a result of an event that literally occurred millennia ago. I mean, it's hard to inspire emotions about an event that occurred a century ago. Never mind a millennia ago, never mind more than 3,000 years ago. So as much as we talk about it and dramatize it and mention it, and we all know that the Exodus of Egypt is an integral component of Jewish literature and of Jewish observance and of mitzvahs and of Torah, nonetheless, it's not a reality. It's very difficult for it to become a reality. I mean, it's important to understand this in order to appreciate what the Alter Rebbe is going to do in this chapter. But let's for a moment think about the event in contemporary terms. The greatest crisis for the Jewish people today is, of course, in the land of Israel. Our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael suffer today from daily and weekly murderous terrorist attacks from the Arabs, who shell, shoot, explode themselves, bomb, killing daily, weekly, countless men, women, children. And everybody is debating, what do you do? How do you respond to it? Are you supposed to deal with it through diplomacy, through political methods, through force, through war, how much force, and so on and so forth? And every three Jews have another 19 opinions. Imagine for a moment that Hashem will start dealing with the terrorists directly. If tomorrow an Arav, a large group of beastly devouring animals would come and attack the terrorists, if all the waters of the PLO and their supporters would turn suddenly into blood.
That's what's in our prayers against our enemies.
And if these devouring beasts would come and consume them, how would the world respond? What would be the headline in the New York Times? Better yet, if during the Holocaust years, when Hitler, Yimach Shemoy, was gassing 12,000 Jews a day, if suddenly Hashem would start dealing with Germany, if all the water in Germany would turn into blood, there would be not a drop of water to be found. If every German and every SS officer would be struck with lice in his entire body, if swarms of undomesticated animals would come and simply devour them, if a darkness would engulf the entire Germany and the entire army and the entire military force, and in every family the oldest son would die, how would the world respond to that? If in the beginning of the war that's what would have happened, or in the middle of the war. It didn't, but that's what happened in Mitzrayim. That's literally what happened in Egypt. We can't even conceive it. The Jews were subjugated. They were slaves. They were being annihilated, tortured barbarically. And that's what happened. And it never happened again. Never again in history on such a grand scale did Hashem peek out from the Iron Curtain and say, I am the one who is behind this world. All the subsequent miracles the greatest ones that we celebrate, Chanukah, Purim, the most famous, were all enclosed in forces of politics, diplomacy, war, military force. Even the miracles of our generation, the return of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael after the war, or the various miraculous victories and rescuing of the Jewish people throughout the last Jubilee, they were all manifested in the veil of Teva, of natural forces.
What about the fall of the Soviet Union, remember? Some people felt there was a miraculous...
Of course! Of course there were many miracles, but they can be interpreted in various ways. Somebody sent me an article that was published this Purim in the Atlantic Jewish Press, Atlantic City Jewish Press. A columnist writes, what's the primary lesson of Purim? That intermarriage works. Since Esther Amalka intermarried Ahasuerus, she saved the entire nation. So that's what Purim is for her. What's the message? Intermarriage. That's going to save us. So one of the greatest miracles in Jewish history is seen as a result of a successful intermarriage. It demonstrates us what one can do with the story. During Yetzias Mitzrayim, nobody can say that. Hashem pierced all through all the layers. He peeked out of all the veils and all of the dense curtains. And he said, I'm here. And these are really the words that Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people in Parshas Vayeshanan. During his final weeks as he was bidding them farewell, Moshe tells the Jews, Kisha'alna liyamim rishoinim asher hayu lefanecha. I think one can say that this is the whole Torah. And the whole Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu expresses himself here in such a dramatic form. He says, "Kisha'alna leyamim rishonim asher hayu lefanecha lemin hayoyim asher bara elikim adam al haaretz ulemiktzei hashamayim ad ktzei hashamayim haniya kadavar hagodel hazeh yanishma kamayu." Hanisa Elokim Lavoi Lakachas Loi Goy Mikarev Goy B'Masois B'Oisois B'Moipsim B'Molchama B'Yad Chazaka B'Zroya Netuya B'Moirayim Gdolim K'chol Asher Asa Hashem K'chol Asher Asa Lechem Hashem Elokeichim Mitzayim Leinecha. And he concludes, Ata Reisa Ladas Ki Hashem Hua Elokim Einoid Mulvadai. Ask around. From the beginning of history, from one end of heaven to the other end of heaven, has such a thing ever occurred? Has anybody heard of such a thing? That Hashem should individually come and take a nation from the midst of another nation with such wonders and miracles. You were shown to know, Ladas, to experience that Hashem is the God and there's none besides Him. But since that time, it never happened again on a grand global international scale.
It didn't.
Oh, that was once in history.
If it would have been, then the Goyim would have taken it on. The Goyim didn't take it on. The Goyim didn't take on Moshe Rabbeinu as being the Mashiach. Or did he? I'm sorry.
There, the Shalom writes, Rabbi Yishaya Horowitz writes in his Shnei Luchis Habrisim Masechta Pesachim, he discusses the argument in Masechta Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud, between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Lazar says the world was created in Tishrei, and Rabbi Yeshua says the world was created in Nisan. So the Shalom says, Divrei Shnei Amemes, they're both true. Tishrei, the world was created. The world was created, Yesh Meyayin, Ex Nihilo, something from nothing. But everybody denied that Hashem created the world. It wasn't a fact. When did the world see that Hashem created the world? In Nisan. Tishrei, he created it, but it was a concealed fact. You can deny the fact that the world has a master. And that's the reason why Yetzias Mitzrayim, why the Exodus of Egypt, serves as such a central theme in Yiddishkeit and is the foundation of a multitude of mitzvahs, because that event symbolizes and embodies the foundation of Yiddishkeit, which is that Hashem created the world and He is the master of the world at every single moment. And that's what Yitzias Mitzrayim represented. And it was the only event in history that represented it in such a conspicuous fashion, an undeniable way.
By the Goyim, as we know, when whatever one wants to believe, it's possible to believe. Just like in the veil of Teva, everyone's always interpreting everything else. Even in Mitzrayim, we see that Parah's army came shortly afterwards, chased after Klal Yisrael, and Amalek was there to attack us on the way as well. Even the obvious.
You have a good point. Chutzpah and stubbornness can ignore everything, obviously. Amalek, you're saying, how can Amalek fight the Jews? How can Pare be so stubborn? True. There's just a certain state of chutzpah where a person loses all of his senses, like Dr. Rebbe described in chapter 17, the miserable condition of a person who fries his brain so much that he's simply not in control of what he does anymore. So obviously there is that condition where the person becomes insensitive to the most obvious data. True. But for the person living in this world and using his mind and open to what he sees, the mind can play games with us constantly and blame everything on nature and on politics and on historical forces, etc. But Yitzias Mitzrayim represented to the sane, rational, ordinary human being that Einoid Mol Hashem Hu Alekim Einoid Mol Vaday.
I would say that you're saying for the sane, ordinary. It's possible to say that this only applies to Eden also. That level of sanity begins by Eden.
Okay. Okay.
They didn't survive as long as. But even this was only required. This was a breakthrough, but it only allowed someone that's.
You're saying even this breakthrough only allowed somebody with certain prerequisite notions.
Even for this, you have to be.
Okay, you have to be a vessel for this as well. Granted.
But.
For a year, it did something.
In any case, back to our present discussion. For a Jew who lived during that time, or for a Jew who lived in close proximity to that time, you can understand what such an event does to you. Again, for a Jew living in 1941 in Warsaw or in Lodz or in Krakow or in 1944 in Hungary, and for to experience this, you can imagine how they would feel towards Hashem. If Hashem would intimately and personally get involved with Hitler and his evil demonic forces and destroy them as he did in Mitzrayim, you could say, Kamayim aponim laponim kein leva adam laadam. You could understand how people would feel to Hashem. But for Jews who are living more than 3,000 years after the Exodus of Egypt, more than 3,300 years after Yitzias Mitzrayim, it doesn't really say much. They once asked the Holy Reb Meir of Primishlan, since tonight is Pesach Sheni, so this is a Seder story. They once asked Reb Meir of Primishlan, during the Seder, we engage in various rituals to remember the events of Pesach. So we eat matzah, to remember the lechem ayini, the bread of poverty that the Jews ate when they left Egypt. We eat maror, the bitter vegetables, to recall the bitterness that the Jews experienced in the exile of Egypt. We eat the charoisis, which resembles the mortar and the bricks through which they built the edifices in Egypt. He asked Reb Meiril, why don't we have a zecher? Why don't we have a ritual recalling and remembering the rechush gadol, the great wealth with which the Jewish people left Egypt? So Reb Meir responded and he says, because the former memories of Egypt still remain with us. Jews are still bitter. Jews are still enslaved. Jews are still poverty stricken. He says, aber von der rechush gadol ist kein zecher nicht geblieben. From the great wealth with which the Jews left Egypt, there's no memory left whatsoever. So this is what the Alter Rebbe says in the beginning of 47, that the Mishnah says in Psachim, that in every generation, and furthermore, in every day of your life, you ought to regard yourself as though you left Egypt today. And the question is, how? How can you demand this from the realistic human being? And this is the theme of the 47th chapter of Tanya, which in fact is the shortest chapter in the first section of Tanya. Maybe reflecting the fact that Ki Barach Ha'am, the liberation of Egypt, happened very swiftly, unlike the redemption through Mashiach. The Navi says, Lo b'chipazin teleichu, we're going to go much slower, but in any case, where he explains what does it mean leaving Egypt today. And the point is, if the exodus of Egypt would have been merely a physical event, indeed, we cannot relate to it today. We're not in Egypt. Most of us have never even visited Egypt. But the exodus of Egypt, beyond being a physical event, was also a spiritual event. And this event, one can experience not only in each generation, but literally every single day of his life. Zogdal Terebbe, Vihi, what is this? Yitzias nefesh ha'alaikis mi meiser haguf. We now need to make a transition from the political realm to the spiritual realm. This is the exodus, the release of the nefesh ha'alaikis, of the divine soul, from the confinement and the prison of the body. Mishche dechivya, the body is defined in the Kabbalah as the serpent's skin, which is a much lighter degree of unholiness than that represented by the actual body of the primordial serpent. The body reflects the skin of the serpent, only the skin, but yet the property of the serpent. The expression, the source for this expression, which he already mentioned earlier in Tanya, in 31, is actually in Zohar, in Tikkuni Zohar, in Tikkun 21, the Zohar interprets Hashem's commandment to Moshe Rabbeinu when he wanted to approach the burning bush, the snat. Hashem said, Al tikrav haloim, do not come close, shalni alecha me'al raglecha, remove your shoe from your leg. The Zohar interprets it symbolically, remove the body from your soul. Because the body is mishcha dechivya, the gufa de barnash, iu tzaras, mishcha dechivya, the body of man is a tzaras, it's a spiritual type of, it's spiritually leprous, coming from the serpent's skin. Remove the shoe, remove the skin, so that you should be able to experience the shechina, the divine presence. So the Alter Rebbe says, thus, the body can be compared to Egypt, ervas haaretz, the obscenity of the earth, he discussed in chapter 46, and the soul, the divine soul present, living in the body and with the body, is in prison. It's incarcerated. It's in a bondage. The soul, just like a prisoner in prison, the soul living in the body cannot actualize herself. She's confined. She's suppressed. She's limited. She's not free. She cannot be herself. The soul cannot be her natural self and express her inner identity as when she is in the body. Yitzias Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt, the liberation, the exodus of the soul, one can experience in every generation and every day. But what does this mean? What does this mean, the soul gets liberated from the body? Anybody who's a little familiar with Tanya, with Chassidus, would never suspect Alter Rebbe is going to say, mortify your body, and get out of this world. Emulate the example of Nadav and Avihu. What does it mean, this exodus? What would it look like if the soul was natural? The Alter Rebbe wants to know. Let's describe. What would the scene look like if the soul was free? So the Alter Rebbe says, freedom for the soul means, self-actualization for the soul means, likalel biyichud erin seiv baruch hu. That means the soul can become absorbed in the unity of the energy of the Blessed Endless One, in the unity of the Ein Sof Baruch. That's what exodus, redemption, liberation for the soul means. Likolel b'yichud Ein Sof Baruch, to be absorbed in Hashem's unit. One of the foundational points in the Tanya, beginning with chapter 20, and we discussed this many times, is, and this is one of the great conceptual revolutions of Tanya, as we discussed at length in 20 and 21, that the true definition of reality is Hashem. It's wrong to say that God exists in reality. God is reality. What is reality? Hashem, that's reality. We live in God. We live in reality. Hashem, that's the exclusive reality. However, since Hashem concealed himself, he allowed us to give reality new definitions. He had allowed us to define reality in new ways. My ego is reality. The physicality of the world is reality. My selfish cravings are reality. Whatever it is, everybody has their own definition for reality. More noble, more coarse. But all the definitions come from the truth being covered, concealed. Very good. Counterfeit realities. If the veils were to be removed, it would be obvious. But since the veils exist, reality is not transparent, and we substitute real reality with counterfeit realities, and we take them seriously. As explained at length in Tanya, Zogid Alter Rebbe, the soul, the divine soul, is at home when it's absorbed in reality. In true reality, which means when it's absorbed in the oneness of Hashem, in the unity of Hashem, in the exclusivity of His reality, because His reality is exclusive, as explained at length in Tanya in the 20s. As long as the soul is not absorbed, is not nullified in that unity, she's imprisoned. She's detached from her natural environment. The soul needs, its bread and butter is Achdus Hashem, the oneness of Hashem. The soul needs not politics. The soul needs not self-aggrandizement. The soul needs not fame, popularity, wealth, affluence. The soul needs divine vulnerability. The soul needs oneness with Hashem, pure transcendence. That's what its need is.
Avraham Avinu wasn't transcendent.
1 second. Good question. He's going to get there in a moment. So the soul is content. She's free in one place when she's absorbed in Hashem's unity. If she's not there, she's robbed from her freedom. She feels subjugated to a hostile authority in which she cannot express herself fully, which is the definition of an incarcerated individual. She expresses herself when she's absorbed in Hashem's unity. That's what the Alter Rebbe says. This is your soul. You want to know your soul? Your soul is redeemed, finds herself when she is one with Hashem.
Does the body feel it?
He's saying that,
Now, how does this happen? He's going to mention Avram. He's going to talk about Avram in a moment. One moment. 1 second. How does this happen? How does the soul become absorbed in Hashem's unity, which is her personal redemption of bondage, her personal Yetzias Mitzrayim? So one can say, of course, you have to crush the body. You have to get rid of the reality that the body represents. But the Alter Rebbe would not say that, because then the mysticism of Tanya would clash with Halacha. And the Alter Rebbe will always synthesize and integrate in his eyes, Kabbalah and Halacha are one. So the Alter Rebbe goes back to his already well-known formula for the soul to be absorbed in Hashem's unity. Zog the Alter Rebbe, how does this happen? Ayidei Eisei HaTorah VaHaMitzvos Bechlal. By engaging in the Torah and in the mitzvahs in general. Because as the Alter Rebbe explained earlier in chapter 23, to live with reality in this world, which means to live with Hashem's unity in this world, is through Torah and mitzvahs. Because in Torah and mitzvahs, Hashem is absolutely, manifestly present. And therefore, in the realm of Torah and mitzvahs, all is one with Him. In every other experience of life, there is a compromise in Hashem's unity. The concealment impacts that experience. In Torah and mitzvahs, there's no compromise in Hashem's unity. There are no veils. There are no concealments. And therefore, when Hashem's essence is present, as it is in Torah and mitzvahs, we live, we become reoriented, we become connected with the unity of Hashem, just as it was post-create, just as it was pre-creation. That's a good question. I, in Torah and mitzvahs, there are the physical components. So the Alter Rebbe explained. When we say that Hashem is truly the exclusive reality, it doesn't mean there's no world. Of course there's a world. He created a world. It means that the world has, in truth, the world has no reality independent of Hashem's reality. But we perceive it to have an independence because of the Tzimtzum, because He conceals Himself. In Torah mitzvahs, there's no concealment. So in the world of Torah mitzvahs, Hashem is totally, conspicuously manifested, and therefore every component involved in Torah mitzvahs is redefined from an egocentric, detached, independent reality as a reality which is a conduit for Hashem's unity. And therefore it's through Torah and mitzvahs that one realigns himself and the world with true reality, which is Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. So through Torah and mitzvahs, the soul leaves prison. The soul actualizes itself in the deepest way possible. And Alter Rebbe adds, or Befrat, particularly, Bekabolas Malchus Shemayim Bekriya Shema. Through accepting the kingdom of heaven during the recital of the Shema, Sheba, because it's during the recital of the Shema, that Mekabel Umam Shechalav Yichudi is Baruch Beferush, that a person explicitly accepts and draws upon himself the unity of Hashem, Ba'amrei, when he declares, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Hashem is our God, Hashem is one. So although this is the content of every single mitzvah, every mitzvah allows us to experience the oneness of Hashem, the exclusivity of Hashem's reality, which is the only definition of reality, but particularly the liberation of the soul's Egypt is during Shema. Because during Shema, when we recite the Shema, we declare Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and thus the soul goes back to herself, becoming absorbed in Hashem's unity. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, when a Jew says Shema, what he essentially is saying is, good morning world, good morning body, let me not be a prisoner of you today. Allow me to be free, and allow me to free you. That's what Shema is. In the morning there's a mitzvah to say Shema, that's what the soul is saying. I don't want to be in a dungeon today. Let me be me. Or at night, the soul is saying, good evening world, good evening body, let us together experience freedom this evening. Hashem Aleikenu, Hashem Echad. Obviously, the body does not necessarily feel this unity.
Doesn't it say that also before the
That's what he said in chapter 46.
Does it also say that neshama?
But the unity occurs, and for the neshama, it's a liberation. When we refine our bodies, we can feel the liberation more. But for the soul, this is self-actualization. This is not only her bread and butter, this is her breath.
Would it be compared to...
Now here she's free. She's just out of prison. You want to know if it's an outer body transcendent metaphysical experience. It's an outer body transcendent metaphysical experience within the body. Which is how the Alter Rebbe views the essence and the purpose and function of Yiddishkeit ultimately. The Alter Rebbe had a chassid, one of his greatest chassidim. His name was Reb Zalman Zesmer. He was a brilliant scholar and an extraordinary, pious, spiritual man. The Chabad Rabbeim said about him once that he was a chacham be'etzem koya chachmasai, which means his intellectual creativity penetrated the core of his brain. He used the very essence of his intellectual powers to think. How much percent of our brain power do we use?
About 10%, I think they say.
10%, barely. He was an extraordinary man. He was a Rav in a city, and one morning he has just finished davening. He was taking off his tefillin, and two Jews came into his Besdin Shtibel, to the home where he would deal with disputations. The room where he would deal with various disputations, they came for a din Torah. One Jew says, "You owe me 1,000 ruble. I lent you 1,000 ruble, I want it back." And the other Jew says, "I borrowed 1,000 ruble, but I already paid you 500. I paid half, so I only owe you 500. So Reb Zalman Zesmer hears, and he says, this is the classical case of Maida B'miktzas, of a partial conceder. The halacha is that if a person denies the debt completely, if he would say, "I owe you nothing," so from a biblical vantage point, he would be exempt. There's no proof, there are no witnesses. But if you are Maida B'miktzas Atayna, if you're a partial conceder, the Torah obligates you to accept upon yourself an oath and to swear that indeed you have paid up half of the debt, and therefore you don't owe those $500, and you're exempt from paying the rest. So the Jew says, Rebbe, ich schwer, I'm ready to swear, I paid him. So Reb Zalman says, Eminut, let's first learn the Gemara, what the Gemara says about swearing in this case. He takes out the Gemara in Baba Metzia Dav Gimel. Zog the Gemara, Kedirabe, Amar Rabbe, Rabbe set. Mipnei ma, Amra Torah, Moedim Miksa Satayni Yishava. Why did the Torah say that a partial conceder has to take an oath? As the commentators explain the question, Taisus explains, apparently you could say if he was lying, he could have said a much better lie. He could have denied the entire thing. The fact that he's conceding partially means apparently that he's saying the truth. If he's lying, just deny everything. You don't have to pay anything. Why should he want to pay 500? Yet the Torah does not believe him, and the Torah says he has to swear. So Rabbi answers, because hai bekulei boi de lichperi. Really, I say he wants to deny it all. He would really say, I owe you nothing. The problem is, chazaka eina de meis ponov b'fnei bal chayvei. We know a person doesn't have the chutzpah, doesn't have the brazenness, the audacity to deny a fact in the presence of the man who knows that he lent him the money. A person just doesn't have the chutzpah that in your presence he should say, I don't owe you anything. And therefore, partially to deny it, you can have the chutzpah to do. But completely to deny it, you don't have the chutzpah to do. And therefore, he couldn't lie completely. And he was forced, so to speak, based on this natural human emotion and sensitivity, to deny half. And this will make him swear. And then he continues. And he views it from the opposite direction. Conversely, we can say, really, we're not dealing with a liar at all. Really, he would like to admit it all. He would like to tell him, I owe you the entire 1,000 ruble. Why is he not? Ishtemutehu dekam ishtametle. He's trying to evade the situation, to avoid the person, because he doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the funds needed. So he thinks, in the meantime, I'll give him what I have. I'll deny the rest. When I have the rest of the money, then I'll come and I'll pay him. It's uncomfortable for me to say, I owe the money and I don't have it. I was supposed to have it, so I deny it and he'll pay it up. So therefore, the Torah says, Rami alei shvua, let him swear that he doesn't owe the rest. So even if he's doing it just to feel more comfortable, he will certainly not swear falsely, because that he's not going to do, because he's really not a liar, he's not a cheater, he's just doing it to save his face. So if you'll make him swear, he's not going to swear, and he'll say the truth, and truth will be established. That's the Gemara. So Reb Zalman Sesmer says, Lamer Uptaych in the Gemara Api Chassidus. Let's explain this Gemara according to Chassidus. And this is what he says. He says, we all have within ourselves two components. We have a soul and we have a body. Hai bekulei boye de lichpere. Really, the body, if you would just leave things up to the body, bekulei boye de lichpere, the body would deny everything. The body would deny God entirely, spirituality entirely, a higher transcendent reality entirely. The problem is, eina de meis ponov b'fnei bal chayvei. The body is living with the soul. And the soul experiences godliness. The soul is a transcendental creature. The soul comes from another world. The soul is a chelek elikamimal, part of Hashem. The soul is not an egocentric physical beast. The soul is selfless. The soul is divine. The soul is spiritual. The soul needs transcendence. So in the presence of the soul, b'fnei bal chayvei, the body can't deny it all. So the body concedes partially. God exists, but not totally. God exists here, but not there. Hashem is a reality, but not the exclusive reality. He makes compromises, right? And that's what we all Jews do. A little spirituality. But to totally surrender yourself, to totally say, Hashem Echad, that the body doesn't have to do. The body doesn't deny it all. That's the body's perspective. Then the Gemara says, but look at it from the other point of view. Hai bekulei boye delay delay. Look at it from the soul's point of view. The soul really wants to say it all. The soul doesn't have to lie in order to protect itself. The soul doesn't feel it needs to lie about money in order to live. That's a prison for the soul. The soul wants to admit that the only reality is Hashem, and that's my only interest, my only motivation, my only inspiration, and my only life. But the soul has a body, and the body schleps it down, tries to avoid the truth. Tries to avoid the truth that's staring it in its eyes. And thus, we make the Jew swear we have to give him a shtup. To say, enough of avoiding the truth, just allow yourself to surrender to the true reality. The moment the Yid heard that, he said, Rebbe, Rebbe, ich gebe zurück the Geld. I'll give him back the whole money. When he revealed the essence, the soul of what the Gemara is saying, he demonstrated to the Jew, if you know yourself really, you'll know that you don't have to lie in order to live. You don't need it. Know you. Get to know your soul. Get to know your soul's needs and you'll see you don't have to deny that you borrowed from somebody money in order to survive. The soul doesn't need it. Bekulei bayi deloidelei. That's what Alter Rebbe is saying. But when can the soul experience this truly? Torah and mitzvahs, particularly Shema.
But what is, I mean, if a person said Shema, not this Shema,
then it's not the mitzvah of Shema.
No, but I understand. Is he saying that just that he becomes free is adapted because it's the mitzvah?
Yeah. You want to know if it's the mitzvah or it's the spiritual experience? It's the mitzvah. It's the mitzvah. The mitzvah has a more conscious impact on us when there is a spiritual experience involved. That was chapter 38, 39, and 40. The spiritual experience are the wings that allow the bird to fly. But the bird is the mitzvah. This was discussed at length before in Tanya. Why the mitzvah? Because you don't just want a spiritual experience. You want godliness. You want the unity of Hashem. For that, you need a place in which there's no concealment. The deepest spiritual experience still is impacted by the veils. A mitzvah, Torah, over there are no veils. The Torah and mitzvahs take us to a pre-creation state when there were no veils. In Torah and mitzvahs, Hashem is totally revealed. When He's totally revealed, it's obvious that He's the only reality. This requires really a whole explanation, but many chapters dealt with this. I'm not getting into it because it's really the foundation of this chapter. But chapters 20 through 25, and then the end of the 30s, 35, and 36 and 37 and so forth. So really chapter 47 follows all those chapters. It's hard to understand what he's saying without that introduction. Okay, let's go weiter. Yeah.
Is it possible for a person, if he wishes to use the Shema, not just twice a day, but as a kind of a meditation?
Gesundheit? You want to know if a person can use the Shema not just twice a day, but type a kind of a meditation to the truth he's saying? Of course.
So that way he would be, feel more
of course. Of course. It's basically, I told you, the Shema is you turning to your body and to the world and say, tell your body, let me not be a prisoner today. Let me be free and I'll set you free. That's what Shema is. That's a powerful perspective on Shema. That's the Alter Rebbe's perspective. Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now he adds what we say in Shema is Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is our God. Hashem is one. So the emphasis here is not only on the Hashem is one, it's also that Hashem is our God. K'moshen Izbo Yerleil, as has been previously explained in chapter 46. That when we say our God, it's to be understood in the same way as when we say, for example, in the beginning of the Shemoneh Esrei, in the beginning of the Amidah, Elokei Avraham, the God of Avraham, and so forth, the God of Yitzchak, or the God of Yaakov. In other words, Elokeinu emphasizes the fact that it's not just a God, it's our God. He relates to us. We say it in the, so to speak, in the possessive form. He was Hashem, he was Avram's God. He's our God. Why? How did he become Avram's God? Lefi shahaya batal v'nichlal b'yichud erein seiv baruchu. Here we come to your question, because Avram became nullified and absorbed in the unity of the light of the Ein Sof, of the Endless One, blessed be He, Avraham left the realm of self-consciousness. He left the realm in which reality is distorted and concealed, and he surrendered himself to be absorbed in true reality, namely, in Hashem's unity. So the same is true concerning us, that through Shema, Hashem Echad, Hashem becomes Elokeinu, our God. It becomes ours because we surrender ourselves. But here is the big difference. It's just that Avraham merited this union by reason of his works. And Avraham is advancing in holiness from degree to degree until he uplifted himself to that level of nullity and unification of the self with Hashem's reality. As the Pasuk puts it in Parshas Lech Lecha. Yisa Avram Holoich v'nasaya v'geimer, and Avram journeyed, going on, and the pasuk concludes Hanegba Holoich v'nasaya Hanegba, that Avram journeyed on, going on, going steadily to the south. So the Alter Rebbe explains in Torah Eira, in Parshas Yisrei, I believe, that Doroim south is the right side of Mizrach, of East. And East in Torah is always the primary side. That's where the sun comes up from. So Doraim, south, is the right of East. And Tzafay, north, is the left of East. So in Kabbalah and Chassidus, south embodies the energy of love. And north embodies the left-oriented energy of gevura, of rejection, of judgment. So this is the deeper meaning. Vayisa Avram Holoich v'nasaya Hanegba. The Alter Rebbe writes in Torah that all the journeys the Torah describes concerning Avram Avinu's life is not just a description of physical journeys. It's a description of spiritual journeys, of the inner journeys of a soul. And it's a fascinating study because the Torah discusses so much the journeys of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. The Alter Rebbe says it's inner journeys of the soul. And in our case, Avraham was journeying on, going to the south, experiencing a deeper love, more south and more south, more becoming absorbed in love and more becoming absorbed in love. So Avraham, through his own work, his own meditation and discipline and transcendence, he achieved this state. Aval anachnu, concerning us, Yerushom atanei lanu, for us, the descendants of Avraham, it's a heritage and a gift. Shanol, Salonu es Teirasei, for Hashem has given us his Torah. And what does this mean? V'hil b'shbar, etzayne v'chachmasi yizbarach. And he clothed in it, in his Torah, he placed his will and his wisdom. Which are united with his essence and his being in perfect unity. And thus, so it's as though Hashem gave us his very self by giving us the Torah, which is his will and wisdom, one totally with him. It's as though he gave us his very self. As the Holy Zohar comments on the verse in the beginning of Parashas Truma, v'yikhuli truma, they should take for me a portion or a contribution. Zog de Zoyar, and Alter Rebbe adds in parentheses, the li kiloimar oisi. When it says v'yikhu li truma, the Zoyar says it actually means to take me. Literally, we interpret v'yikhu li truma, they should take a portion for me, for my sake. Like Rashi says, li lishmi, they should make a contribution to the tabernacle for me. But the Zohar says, li means oisi, v'yikhu oisi. They should take me. They should actually take me. Freg the Zohar. V'hav elele meimar utruma. According to this interpretation, it should have said, v'yikhu li utruma. Because if Yikhalutruma means they should take a contribution for me, I understand. Li qualifies the nature of the Truma. But according to the Zohar's interpretation, Yikhli is they should take me. Yikhli is they should take me. And something else. They should also take Truma. They should also take a contribution. Or as the Zohar interprets it elsewhere, that Truma is Torah. The Zohar says, this is in another Zohar, in Parashas Korach, the Zohar says, Truma consists of two letters, of two words. Torah Mem. It's the Torah that was given in 40 days. So it's for sure two things. V'yikhuli, they should take me. U'truma and Truma. The Zohar goes on to explain the connection between Torah and Truma. Truma was the tithe, the contribution. Every Israelite was obligated to give a portion of his grain, his wine and his oil, rabbinically also the vegetables and fruits, to the kohen, to the priest. How much do you give? No. So biblically, there's no, you can give as much as you want. However, Talmud says, our rabbi said, Ayin Yafe, if you have a good eye, if you're a generous person, you give Echad Me'arboyim. You give one of 40. If you have an ordinary eye, I mean, if you're an ordinary person, you give Echad Me'chamishim, one of 50. Which would mean, in other words, 2%. And if you had a bad eye, if you're stingy, you give one of 60. So Torah was given in 40 days. Zog de Zohar, we all know what our sages say, that Hashem gave Torah as a present to Moshe, but Moshe had an ayin yafe, nag batoivas ayin. Moshe was generous, Moshe was selfless, and he gave it to the Jewish people. So he gave that which he received in 40 days. Similar to the Truma, one of 40, to the Jewish people because he had an ayin yafa. But in any case, the Zohar interprets that Truma goes on Torah. So the question in Zohar Parshas Truma is, it should say, v'yikhuli u'truma. It's two things. And what's the answer? Ela mishum de kulachad. Except that both are one and the same. V'yikhuli, they should take me. What does it mean, take me? It means take Truma. It's not take me and take Truma. Take me. And what does it mean, take me? Take Truma. Eat Torah. Consume Torah. Learn Torah. Ein Sham Hetev. Look into that Zohar well. The Zohar that asks this question doesn't say that Truma is Torah. It's just obvious from that Zohar that Li means Hashem himself. And the Zohar says it should have said Utruma, but the Zohar in Korach says that Truma is Torah. Perhaps that's included in the Ein Sham Hetev. But in any case, that's how the Alter Rebbe sees the meaning in this Zohar. So what is he saying?